Welcome to Career Tools. This is Wendy.
And this is Amanda.
Today's cast, the basics of asynchronous communication.
The questions this cast answers are, how is communicating asynchronously different? How can I prevent back and forth when team members are in different time zones? And how do I make sure my written communication is as effective as a real-time conversation?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
We're coming to DC. December 3rd and 4th, we'll be in the Washington, DC area. We're hosting an EMC and ECC, Effective Management Day 1 and Effective Communication Day 2. If you're in the area or willing to travel, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to becoming a more effective professional, better management, better communication, and an opportunity to meet other professionals in the DC area or from nearby. We love coming to DC and we'd really like to see you there too. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Communicating asynchronously, which I'm going to remind myself means not at the same time. So it's a conversation where the other person can't talk back, which is for a high D, the best kind of conversation. But it's for all of those conversations that we have where the other person isn't there at the same time. So many remote teams share some overlapping work hours, but we often need to collaborate across different time zones and varying schedules. And even peers in the same time zone may find their peak productive hours aren't the same as yours. And so that means we end up relying on written communication. And that kind of sounds like a problem we've had forever, right? How long have we been saying it's difficult to communicate in email and sometimes it's better to pick up the phone? Well, sometimes that person's in bed and you can't pick up the phone. And what's more, there's a real delay. So if you've picked up a piece of communication or you're sending a piece of communication and the other person who's asynchronous to you is in bed for another 8 hours and then you're going to go to bed, like that's like a 16-hour delay on a conversation that would have happened immediately in the previous world. Just like if you have a meeting with 10 people, it's 5 times as expensive as a meeting with 2 people. The same communication happening asynchronously is also more expensive because it takes longer to have the same conversation and therefore there's a delay in the benefit of that conversation. So that's reality. What can we do?
So in this cast, we're going to cover bottom line up front, then give context. Next, write more, not less. And then lastly, increase specificity.
So bottom line up front, or bluff, B-L-U-F, we sometimes say. So if you're going to write something that you know you're not going to be able to clarify verbally, it's even more important to be clear about the reason for the communication. How many emails have you got where you've got to the end and you're not actually sure what the person wanted you to do? That's why you put in a bluff that at the top that says, please make a decision, or this is just for your information, or please, can you tell someone something? Like the bluff right at the top tells the person who's reading what they need to do.
So our guidance for creating a good bluff, the world got the idea of a bluff from the American Marines. It stands for bottom line upfront, and it's a way to communicate the most important thing, dare I say, the bottom line, quickly and efficiently. Not every email demands a bluff, and when you want a decision or an answer, a bluff is perfect.
And that was from our original cast called Creating a Good Bluff. So if you are struggling to create good bottom line upfront sentences, then listen to that guidance because it's much more specific than this. But when we're in an asynchronous world, I think we have to change this to from not every email demands one to every email, every communication needs a bluff if you're not going to be able to clarify what you mean with that person. Because even if you're only sharing information, if you don't say that up front, the person who receives the communication has no idea that the information is just for their information. And they're going to read all the way to the end thinking, what am I supposed to be doing with this? Why are they telling me this story? And then they get to the end and they're still not necessarily sure what they were supposed to do. So being really clear about what you want that person to do is really essential.
And we are really carefully saying communication here. So communication is really in quotes. And it's not just email. It's pull request comments discussing code changes. It's code review feedback threads. It's JIRA ticket discussions and updates or project management system updates, task status updates, comments on design systems, shared document collaborations, Slack threads, internal wikis, documentation, and an endless stream of all the new systems that they continually create to help us communicate more. So it's not only because of remote work and asynchronous communication, but we speak less and write more than ever before. So there's always a new way to communicate asynchronously, especially with as many people live behind their screens. So when we say communication, we're talking about all of these things for asynchronous.
And for a lot of these non-email communications, there's a variety of people who's going to read your communication. So peers, internal clients, team managers, and so on. So not only do you have to give the person that you're directly communicating with or that you're thinking of the bottom line upfront explanation of what it is you want them to do, you may also have to do this for several people or groups of people in one communication.
As you might have already realized, there's not going to be much mention of empty disk in this guidance. And that's because we're talking to a lot of different people. We're communicating with a different variety of profiles. And when you're communicating with a group, trying to adapt to several different disk profiles is nearly impossible. And it makes it a lot less clear. So when you're addressing a single person, as we will in examples later, you can adapt your communication style. And we'll go over those specific examples. But if you're communicating to a group as a whole, don't worry about trying to be as specific to their certain style. But we still want your communication to be effective. So for high I's or S's, you can still use bluff, but either start it with a greeting or soften it by including phrases like, please could you, and thank you for your attention or help on this, rather than just going straight into the request itself, which high D's and high C's would love you to do.
Well, so we're going to give you an example now. And in this, there are five different groups of people or teams that are being addressed. So what each team needs to do is different. So we end up effectively with five bluffs, one for each group. So the title of the communication is Holiday Season Email Campaign Proposal. And then you'd write bottom line up front or bluff. And then marketing team, please review campaign messaging and timeline. Design team, need artwork for 5 email templates by November 10th. Content writers, verify product descriptions and pricing. Legal, check holiday promotion terms and conditions. Regional managers, confirm inventory levels for featured products. So effectively, we've got like 5 different lines of bluff. You don't have to like put them all into one because that would be even more confusing.
In this example, for a high I design team, the bluff might be, would you be able to send me artwork for 5 email templates by November 10th? And if that doesn't work for you guys, let me know and I'll amend it with my plan to fit. So when you break it down into each of those individual groups, if you know overall you have a high I team, you can adjust their specific bluff to them. However, if you don't, if everyone's a bunch of different profiles, just stick to being short, sweet, and to the point in this example for each one.
So once we've had the bottom line up front, the next thing is context.
So every communication needs context. While the topic or the fact, this is that continuing communication is clear in your mind when the person or people receiving the communication can't guarantee that they're going to understand the link, have the latest communication in mind, or even remember it at all. And really what that means is you have something in your brain and that if you don't give them context, they really have no idea what you're talking about. And full disclosure, I'm the worst at this. I feel so bad anyone communicating with me because I just start to talk and they're like, you need to back up. I have no idea what you're talking about. I was like, that's fair. I gave you no context because I had half this conversation in my brain already.
I think it's a high D thing. We just like get to the point and we forget that nobody else is in our own brain. So in person, we say things like, do you remember? Or, so you know that drama from last week? Or, can I talk to you about client A's order? So we give people a clue. And if even if we have started, like Amanda and I do, in the middle, if you see someone's face and they're looking at you like, I have no idea what you're talking about, that gives you the reminder, oh, wait a minute, hold on, I need to back up and I need to explain. Hey, I changed topics, or hey, I'm talking about client A. When you're writing and that you don't see that person and you don't get the opportunity to clarify with that person, you can't do that prefacing. So you have to assume that the reader doesn't remember the conversation that you already had or doesn't know what the context is. And you have to give them enough information that they can carry on to do the next task without you. This is especially true in, I find, on Slack or instant messaging, I'm much more likely to say, hey, is the page for the sales up? And the person I'm writing to is in the middle of something else and like sees my message 2 hours later and is like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And 2 hours later, nor do I, because I've moved on too and I have no idea. So the practice of saying, this is what I'm talking about before you start talking is a really good one.
Yeah, it just helps you kind of get your mind in the right place. So before you start writing the context, again, remind yourself that not everyone has the same understanding of the problem that you do. And in fact, we asked AI to provide us with a relevant example for the bluff. And it gave us an example for ad rate limiting to authentication endpoints. And that's fine if you're a technical expert, but non-technical amongst us have no idea what rate limiting means, why you would employ it, and what effect it might have on security. So if you gave me that one, I would have no idea what you're talking about.
Right?
No idea.
A context like, we're seeing increased automated attacks on our auth endpoints. This PR implements rate limiting to protect against brute force attempts while maintaining service for legitimate users makes sense for everybody who uses Git and knows what that is. But for non-technical audience, it's useless because we don't know what a PR is. We didn't know what a rate limiting was. And we're not really sure why we would be doing any of this. So if you know, and probably this is true, someone non-technical will be reading your comments, then you've got to say something like, we're seeing increased automated attacks on our authentication endpoints. This code change, pull request, which is what PR stands for, implements rate limiting to protect against brute force attempts whilst maintaining service for legitimate users. So not only have you got to provide context, you've got to provide it in a language that the person receiving it or people receiving it will understand.
This isn't just an issue for developers, accountants, lawyers, and teams communicating outside of their team. In fact, anyone who is using language that is customary in their role, but not customary to others, needs to consider whether they have given enough context in the right language for their audience. So we all have specific jargon that we use, abbreviations that we use that not everybody knows or translate into different roles. So really think about what you know and what another person might not know and make sure that's in your context.
Paul, one of our IT people, often talks about bread boxes. I had no idea for like 3 weeks what a bread box was. And even when I asked for the explanation, I still didn't understand what a bread box was. It's a measure of size of a job in IT, apparently. It's an estimate for a medium-sized job, I think. But those kind of terms that make perfect sense to you, we tend to like use them without thinking because they make sense to us and they, we have that mental picture. And you really have to think sometimes, which out of these things will somebody not understand? And while we're on this topic, if you're communicating asynchronously and there might be language barriers, be careful with abbreviations and other conventions that apply to the language as you use it. So when I came to the US, I would often write W and then a stroke and then C, meaning week commencing. And then you write the Monday's date, and I mean the week of the 19th of November. And it took me a while before 3 or 4 people asked me, what does WC mean? Week commencing. Why do you not know that? That's like really standard. But apparently it's not standard in American English. So even if you are both speaking the same language, especially if lots of people are speaking English, but a lot of it is English as a second language or even if you're speaking a different language and other people are on the team that don't necessarily speak that as a first language, just be careful with those language-specific abbreviations and things as well, because they are also not comprehensible by people outside of your circle.
Relationships matter a lot, not only within your project team or with your colleagues, directs, and bosses, yet perhaps even more importantly, outside of your typical sphere of influence, and in particular with your clients and customers. Let us come on site and teach your team the behaviors needed to achieve a positive outcome, no matter what individual communication styles are. It's not that hard. And most all that attend this training have an aha moment during the day. Contact Maggie by emailing her at customerservice@manager-tools.com or visit us online at manager-tools.com under the training and events menu.
All right, now let's talk about writing more and not less. Especially in status updates or comments on digital systems, it's tempting to write the absolute minimum that can convey your message. Because in our mind, shorter and sweeter is nicer. I would say for the high Ds, right? Short. But as tempting as this is a mistake. Consider an action item on a project management spreadsheet. Inform the client of the status change. That's the only information that's on there. So one could write, done. But that could well leave the person reading it with questions like, when was it done? How was it done? Did you actually get a response? What was the response? Even if a system timestamps with the comment, a reader cannot be sure that that's when the action was taken. So when was it done is still a relevant question. So in this case, done doesn't really help anyone. Leaves
exactly.
More questions than answers and things that need follow-up.
Mm. So a great deal of the success of asynchronous communication is anticipating what the other person will ask. So if I write done, I need to think, okay, if I write done, does everybody else know what I would have done and how I would have done it and whether or not I got a response and what was it? Is there somewhere else in the system where I'm filling in that information so that they can get it? Or are they just going to get done and then be bewildered? So you have to anticipate the person who's reading your comments questions and make sure that you give them all of the information that they need to take the next action. Because the point of this is we don't want to hold up the process or whatever it is that's happening and make that timeline longer. So in order to do that, you have to make sure that the person who comes after you has all of the information to carry on.
So let's say that informing the client of the status change requires a follow-up to be sent. Your colleague has posted done 3 minutes before the end of their shift. Now, assuming that's when they actually did the task and that either of you could send the follow-up form, and
you're left wondering, did they send it? Given they didn't say so and they were about to leave the office, right? Do I need to send it?
Yeah. Did they send it? Do I need to send it? And
yeah. And I'm thinking, well, it's 3 minutes before they left the office. And I know that, you know, they have to pick up a child from school, so they couldn't have been late. And, you know, there's all those questions going on in mind.
Yeah. And most of us would really prefer not to have to contact the client themselves to ask whether anyone followed up. So a forward-thinking colleague working with a high C might have written, in this case, called Jim at 1540 local. Jim said he's happy with the change and willing to continue, did not send follow-up form. Darren, please update the draft that's on Jim's account and send it via the transactional portal. UID 197563, request number 840392, change ID P74.
Because if you've got a high C colleague, they want all of those details, even if they're somewhere else as well. It's nice to put it all in one place so that the next person can carry on.
Wouldn't that be lovely if you only had to look one place to know if you had to do the next action item?
Mm-hmm.
Especially first thing in the morning, right? If
yes.
In different time zones, that would be so, because you can action this right away or not, you know, based on the information given.
Right. So next on our list is increased specificity. So we've already just given him an example of a message with quite a lot of specification, like the user ID and the request number and the change ID. But even if you think that the person might know the information that you're going to give them, or you think that their response is going to be, I knew that, you should include more information, because you can't follow up verbally to check what they know. And so you have to assume less knowledge and communicate more. So I always think of this, my mother has this, I guess it's an English saying, don't teach your grandmother to suck eggs. Yes, if you're hearing this in a foreign language, yes, it is about sucking eggs. It's weird. But it's when you tell someone how to do something, they already know. Like my grandmother already knows how to suck eggs, so I don't need to tell her. So sometimes when I'm writing something, I'm like, oh, by the way, you have to go into this drive and save it here and don't forget to attach the whatchamacallit. And I think, don't tell your grandmother to suck eggs. And actually, I don't know that the person I'm communicating with knows all those details. So it's better to put them in if I can't clarify than not. So I have to ignore that little voice in the back of my head about eggs.
Yeah. And realistically, it takes a lot less time for someone to read instructions that they already knew than to have to respond back to you and say, oh, where is that located? And then they wait. And then you're an hour, you know, depending on the time zones. I mean, you could waste a lot of time based on an assumption that was wrong.
Yeah.
So I'd rather read some extra instructions, be like, no, I already knew that. That's really quick.
Yeah, I can skip that bit and then move.
Be like, I have no idea where that's located. And apparently I need to, I was going to make a suck eggs joke, but I don't really know where to go from there. So. And so speaking of the last example, we used local for the time. Time zones are complicated. If you don't know, I live in Arizona, so it makes it even more complicated. We just had daylight savings time right before this, and my calendar is all messed up, so I'm extra antsy about time zones
because
right now.
Because Arizona doesn't change back?
We're always on Mountain Standard Time. We don't forward or spring. Yeah, we don't change, but everyone else does.
Changes around you. It's like being on a train when the other train next to you is moving and it feels like you're moving. It's very confusing. That's how it is with Arizona and time zones.
So time zones is all messed up right now. So this example is a really good one. So be specific about which time zone you're talking about whenever you post a time. Eastern means something totally different between Americans and Australians. And be especially careful when all those clocks change, because not everyone changes their clocks like me. And those that do don't change it on the same days. Everyone might adjust it differently. So the more specific you can be about time zones, the less opportunities you have to mess up your calendar.
Yeah, the UK moves theirs, I think, a week earlier than we do here. And so there's a week twice a year when the count is 5 hours from the UK and not 6. And I can do that mental math without thinking about it because I've been here so long and I might want to call my mom. But my math is always automatically 6 hours. And then I call and it's the middle of a football match and my dad is mad. So don't do that. The other thing I was thinking about here when you were talking about time zones is when you have system timestamps, those are often not in your time zone or a different time zone. We have a customer service system here, which we call Reacher. And I never know whether the timestamp on when it came in from the customer is my time zone or their time zone or a different time zone entirely. So you can't rely on the system timestamps unless you know exactly what time zone it's in.
So outside of time zones, when we're going to increase how specific we are, you need to make sure that when you're talking about what's going to happen next, that you draw attention to it and that you clearly indicate it as an expected action. Be specific about who you're addressing, when you're asking for the task to be done. And if you need a decision, give the decision-making criteria along with that. So give all the information, especially if there's action items that need to happen after this message.
So, for example, you might write decision needed by October 31st, 2024, US Pacific Standard Time. Tom, can you give us a decision on which export formats to include in the initial release. Natalie and Simone have reviewed the format list and are happy for you to choose from it. Thanks, mate. Decision criteria: must support at least three formats from CSV, JSON, XML, PDF. Each format requires 2 developer days to implement. We have 8 developer days available. CSV and JSON are the most requested by current users. PDF requires additional licensing, $2,000 per year. Respond by commenting on prod 789 with the selected formats. And in this example, Tom is a high I, which is why I called him mate. And we had a fairly casual kind of way of asking him. And we mentioned 2 people's names because high I's like to know who it was that you talked to. So we can still give bluff. We can still give context. We can still give him enough information to make the decision and tailor it to his communication because we were only addressing one person.
Being specific includes assigning the task to one person. Even if you know that Tom isn't making the final decision and he'll be consulting others in order to get that decision, specifically assigning the task to him means that the task doesn't fall into the cracks, meaning it doesn't get done because everyone else thinks that someone else is doing it, right? You've always been in those cases where you just assume someone else like, no, they got it.
Yeah.
No, that was me. I thought you had it, right? Don't drop the ball. The person that you assign can always hand the task off to someone more appropriate if they're really not the right person for that assigned task. But assigning to one person means that you can adapt your communication to that person's DISC profile as well. And that the ball doesn't get dropped. Assign it to one person, make sure they catch it, and you can tailor it to actually help your communication get done, right?
So aim for independent progress. The goal of any of these communications is that the person after you can proceed independently to enable that person to take the next action. So they need enough information about the status, the requirements, and your thinking to progress without having to come back to you with questions, because that takes time. And in this case, could be days.
And this means, as we've already said and talked about, anticipating the information that that person needs, the questions that they might ask, and the assumptions that they might take. At first, this can lead to what may seem like overly detailed communication. However, consider an example of a simple lunch order, right? It could read, or you could read it as, if they have cheese, get me cheddar. But if they don't have cheddar, then Swiss is fine. But if they only have American cheese, then skip the cheese altogether, unless it's tuna, because a tuna sandwich definitely needs cheese. What?
Yeah. Imagine trying, I can't even remember that down to the bottom of the stairs of wherever I'm going to get the sandwich.
You're like, I think I heard American cheese. And then you're going to end up with American cheese because that's the one thing that they heard read. Just cheese, right?
Yes.
Well, now this example given covers all the scenarios. It's very hard to follow. And instead, you can structure the information so it's much more clear. For example, the bluff would read, please get me a sandwich from Joe's Deli. Then these are the preferences in order. Now, again, this is all written out. Cheese choice. First choice, cheddar. Second choice, Swiss. If only American cheese is available, no cheese. The exception, if tuna sandwich, any cheese is fine. Bread choice, whole wheat. If no wheat, any bread except for rye.
So much easier. If you had that in front of you, you could stand in the queue with, you know. I can just imagine because I've done it 1,000 times, I guess.
Yeah.
Going to get your boss's lunch because they're too busy. They're back-to-back meetings. And so they give you, and then you stand there in the deli and there's like 15 people behind you and you're trying to remember whether or not they said cheese. And if they said cheese, what kind of cheese? And do they like rye bread? So if you had it written out like this, it would be so much easier. So even for something simple like ordering lunch, a clear structure makes it easier for others to act independently and get it right first time. And all us high Ds would love it if you wrote every single lunch order out like that.
I'm just going to say us high Ss would love it as well, so we don't make a mistake and you're happy.
Yes.
Right? Because if we brought you back a disappointing sandwich,
you'd be really sad.
I would be so sad. In fact, I am. I really like this amount of detail so I can make sure I get it right.
Yeah. So this guidance provides a foundation for effective asynchronous communication. And while straightforward, these principles can really enhance your communication effectiveness. So if you incorporate all of these practices into your daily communication, you'll see fewer misunderstandings, faster response times, and better outcomes. Because the key isn't knowing the principles, it's actually using them when you write things. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. Join us next week when we cover a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye.